Welcome to New Realities with Alan Steinfeld. Every Tuesday I try to present the latest in cutting-edge realities and what we are doing as a planetary civilization to expand our consciousness. Part of that is including where we are in the cosmos and how we are going to incorporate ourselves as a galactic race of people, of beings, and of people that transcend the home planet Earth. Tonight I have two guests who are very much involved in the evolution of consciousness here on the planet. They are longtime guests of New Realities. I want to introduce Dr. Hertok and Desiree Hertok. Keys of Enoch is Dr. Hertok is the author of, and together they've translated the Coptic text, the Pistosophia. Hello, are you there?
I'm here, go ahead.
Hi, Alan.
Hi. Okay, tonight we're really going to talk about UFOs, and Dr. Hertok just came back from a conference in Brazil, and Desiree is also very familiar with the topic. So why don't you just give us a rundown of what happened at that conference?
Well, at the conference, we had a rare opportunity to bring together two of the more than 12 participants in Washington, D.C. Actually, there were 16 who testified earlier last week
at the
National Press Club on the scientific reality of UFOs.
I guess we should start there then. On November 12th in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club, there was a conference with leading pilots and I guess military people from all over the planet, a lot of different countries, telling us about the reality of UFOs. So made a lot of press on CNN and the mainstream papers. I think the New York Times even printed a story about that. So we're starting to make the presence known of what reality really truly exists. So this conference in Brazil was a sort of add-on or sort of picking up where that left off?
It was picking up where that left off with Latin American participants and others from Europe and the United States. And I was really honored to be one of the guest speakers on the program that brought together Dr. Richard Haynes from NASA, who has been on every important UFO documentary shown in the United States.
Who is he? What's his background?
Richard Haynes has been with, he's now retired, but he has this very outstanding background with Ames in Northern California, which has been one of the research facilities for NASA. And as early as the 60s, he was involved with some of the more important studies dealing with projects such as Gemini, Apollo, Skylab, and other very important projects. He also has continued, now that he's in a retirement mode, as one of the principal scientists with NARCAP, which is to look at the interaction between unknown aerial phenomena, events, and pilots throughout the world, particularly in the United States, who have had these difficult situations of seeing things that they cannot relate to, and he was able to bring across a plethora of information from Melbourne, Australia, to more important realities of encounters between pilots and unknown spacecraft from various parts of the world.
In fact, Haynes, if I can say hi to you, Alan.
Yeah, hi, Desiree. Jump in.
Okay. He was one of the people who worked with some of our Academy members and Jaime Maussan down in Brazil and also in Mexico, where, especially in Mexico, where they were looking at this Campeche UFO sighting. This is where six vehicles were seen mainly by radar by a small airplane that was a government airplane flying over the Gulf of Mexico.
You know, I knew someone who had a sighting of that in Baja, Mexico, herself, a visible sighting, and she was transformed after that sighting. So
yeah, no, it was a very profound, in fact, probably one of the most profound recent sightings, and I think that was the most interesting thing.
Actually, it was 11 objects appeared in Toho, seen by military radar, not by visible eyesight from the pilots involved. And so this case is very important as a benchmark because it shows that which it would be normally in the invisible area of the human spectrum being calibrated
and
recorded by very sophisticated tracking devices.
It seems like now there's a huge presence, a lot of press. Are things changing, do you feel? I mean, I know the French released their papers. And
well, Mr. Jacques Pannonet, who was with the GAPON organization, in fact still is, who was responsible for the release of over 1,600 documents earlier this year, was there as one of the participants in Brazil with us. And he spoke quite directly to the scientific database that the French have accumulated. Of course, they have released a lot of documentation, minus those that had psychological overtones. And because of the subjective factors, those documents will not be released for some time.
What does that mean, psychological overtones?
Well, the psychological issues would involve the participants, some of their personal case histories, how they have changed psychologically as a result of the experience of seeing unknown spacecraft,
I think that's actually very important because I think that is why all the secrecy, I mean, this is just what, because it's that very transformation that we, you know, this is the area you're working in that has to happen in order for what they call disclosure to really come forward. What do you think?
Well, I think the secrecy goes way back to the very beginnings in the 40s with the flyovers of Los Angeles at the outbreak of World War II for the Americans, continued with sightings over Europe during the close of World War II and then into the Cold War period where there were so many aircraft that were lost in pursuit of unknown spacecraft that leading thinkers and military figures like General MacArthur made the statement that the next war would be in space, referring to these unidentified objects more in the negative rather than the positive sense. And in that context that I think the governments of the world agree to take this subject very seriously and keep it really from the popular press in the sense that it was not an easy situation to see the cosmic cultures as a friendly source of influence. Now, we know more since that time.
But nevertheless, Spain has released many of its top secret documents from especially the 50s and 60s and into the 70s. Brazil released some of its top data as well, specifically directly to the ufologists who were studying the information. And now, as you mentioned, France, which is mostly the Science Institute there, has an organization called GAPAN, or G-E-I-P-A-N, and they plan overall to release about 1,650 sightings. For the most part, they think that they're simply aerial phenomena, unidentified aerial phenomena.
How could they think that? I mean, that's
well, you know, but they say, you know, what did the crew of the Air France airliner see over Paris in 1994? I mean, these huge objects are appearing. Or also, of course, getting away from France, what did the Japanese airliner see? If you've ever seen this great illustration, there was a 747 that seemed very dwarf, just like a little miniature, like a mosquito, next to this huge sphere. And the entire passengers, as well as the pilots, reported this at the Japanese airliner.
Who's saying it's aerial phenomena?
Now, the French, I mean, you know, when they release these documents, they're not, none of these governments are saying that you know, UFOs are real, or, I mean, they're saying UFOs are real, but they're not saying extraterrestrials are piloting the ship.
Wasn't that the next step?
Well, they're not willing to say that. I think they are waiting until the U.S. or the Soviets or someone is actually willing to come forward. They're just releasing documents. That's as far as they're going.
Even at the National Press Club on November 12th, all those people wanted to do was have people admit that there was unidentified objects in the sky that were not military. They didn't want to speculate about, you know, being from other planets or anything like that. And I think, you know, when I met with Bud Hopkins, he said he felt that was the way to go. Instead of coming out right at front and saying, yeah, they're here, they're abducting people, they have all this technology, just one simple step at a time. Do you agree with that?
I feel the issue is a very complex level, and my topic in Brazil was the many levels of cosmic intelligence, and my research with the Brazilians and with their sightings in 1986 where spacecraft of unknown origin came over all of their military targets would suggest that most of the air forces of the world and the powers that be would have to diminish the impact by simply admitting, if they would come out public with it, that they would not have all of the psychological and sociological insights to go with the public release. And so not wanting to admit that they are not in full control of our skies, they would have to simply say these are simply the results of space phenomenon that have been misinterpreted, or lens flares, or the emotion byproducts of cameras, et cetera, rather than simply take this headlong. Now, this has changed, and I feel this is the importance of the event that took place early on last week on the 12th, and then was picked up on the 15th through the 18th of November in Curitiba, Brazil, where you had leading South American experts, including Dr. Anthony Choi, who also was in Washington, D.C., give his accounts of real brilliant sightings over Peru that cannot be denied. And so you have a next phase of scientists, engineers, and specialists coming forth comparing notes and saying this is not a localized phenomenon, but it's a global experience, and that we need to increase our database to include the psychological, the sociological, as well as the aerodynamic aspects of what appears to be the interaction of the human evolution with the higher evolution, the coming
of cosmic intelligence on many levels. Well, we'll get into those many levels, but I just want to ask some practical stuff, like how many people were at the conference in Brazil, and what was the upshot, like what was the conclusion to that, but how many people were there?
This conference was attended by approximately 300 people who were more specialists in the field of ufology.
I see.
In other words, it was a conference of quality, not quantity, because we were looking at detailed reports of pilots. We were looking at the insights of specialists who've been involved in many instances for more than 35 years, and we were listening to Nick Pope, connected with the Ministry of Defense from Great Britain, who was a very outstanding speaker on behalf of the situation of having to deal with massive documentation that had to be sifted through from many viewpoints.
Yeah,
his book, Open Skies, Closed Minds, was a bestseller when he released it in the early 90s, and he's been able to go through the many social oscillations of seeing all points of view and realize that there is something very concrete
that is not threatening to national security that has to be emphasized. But I don't understand Nick Pope's perspective, because I've been to a couple of conferences. He works for the British government, but yet he can't get the British government to come forward, yet he's coming forward and talking about it. I don't quite get his role.
Well, if you really listen to him, of course, he's just saying, like I was mentioning earlier, that there's a lot of documentation out there. It looks like there's something real going on. But, you know, if you really listen to him, he's not able to say too much more. He's not saying, we have evidence that there are extraterrestrials that actually exist.
But why not? He's working for the British government. I mean, why can't he come out and say that? Or, you know, I mean, it's just strange. You know, he goes to all the conferences. He presents at all the conferences. I mean, it would be someone like the British government coming forward and saying, yes, we have evidence. There's the Brent Waters case where there were actually U.S. Officials testifying in Washington about Brent Waters.
Ellen, I have to say, we think that's one of the most profound cases, and of course they have brought that out several times as being really one of the best cases across the whole globe, because you had several eyewitnesses standing right there practically, you know, touching the UFOs.
Yeah.
And of course you still get people who are saying, the skeptics, and I saw this on Larry King when they were doing their interviews, a guy coming up saying they didn't know what they were looking at.
Yes,
so,
I mean,
you know, you can't, you know, beat these skeptics unless a government, you know, more than just one person, but a whole government comes forward and says, yes, we have, you know, definitive evidence that we are not alone in the universe.
I mean,
we're all waiting for that.
You know Nick Pope, but why doesn't someone tell him to come forward as a representative of the British government to say that?
Well, he is there as a representative, and he clearly affirmed the importance of the Bentwaters sighting and the role of Charles Hult, who, of course, was a principal person on the scene who acknowledged that there were not only physical craft that had landed specifically in that area of the British and American military locations, but there were non-physical, paraphysical events that were overwhelming that still required deeper insights and investigation, and this is where the other experts come to the front. You need to work with many paradigms, from the psychological to the sociological to the metallurgical to the actual sightings and the film recordings to see the big picture. Most of the traditional experts are only in one small area of data collection. I think that the fact that he was there speaking so affirmatively from the standpoint of listening to his colleagues from Latin America was a good sign to show that there's a networking taking place right now. There is a global step forward, and I think this is also going to open the door for other governments, like the French this year and the Brazilians in 2005, to download documentation that I think will allow people throughout the world to see that their experts from many levels have been carefully preparing the public at large for the fuller story of what cosmic contact is all about. We are building a contact society right now as we speak.
Right. I think it is a psychological, sociological transformation. You know, there's a friend of mine who was getting a divorce, and because she believed in UFOs, she was being called insane, you know? I mean, that was an excuse for not letting her have her child because she had a belief in UFOs, which of course, people like John Mack and even Margaret Mead said, it's not a belief. This is not a belief. Either they exist or they don't exist. There's nothing to believe in. This is not a supernatural fact. It's an actual phenomena.
But John Mack, as you know, almost lost his tenure position at Harvard due to his coming forward and talking about these things.
I know, but he didn't, and Harvard had to concede that, you know, he was onto something. I mean, I don't know if they can see that publicly, but he was able to stay there and say, this is not a psychosis. These people are having a real experience.
Well, we do think there's a control release of information.
The very fact that you had General Ricardo Bermudez and Captain Rodrigo Bravo with the Chilean Air Force there in Brazil was an indication that these were very real objects. These gentlemen do not have any esoteric belief system. They have seen these objects. They have recorded them. They have documented them. And along with the other pilots, they were able to give a breathtaking experience.
Well,
of how
I know they exist.
Come forward.
I mean, and I think the people listening. But then let's talk about the psychological and sociological backgrounds and implications, because in my research, as far back as 1931, Charles Fort said that even if eyewitnesses were to number in the millions, the UFO phenomena would still be explained away and conventionalized.
Well, this is exactly what happened. Dr. Hertak just mentioned Ricardo Bravo from Chile, but in addition, who was also not only in Curitiba, but he was also connected with the November 12th Press Club information. But present also at the Press Club, and it wasn't really documented too much after the fact, if anyone's been watching the news, was former Arizona Governor Simonton.
That was documented. He hosted the Press Club, and he was the one that introduced everyone.
Exactly. And so what you're saying, you know, is fulfilled by him, because basically, as you know, thousands of people in Phoenix saw this tremendous, unusual set of lights that looked like a boomerang, maybe
right.
Six lights. It changed depending on where people were seeing, three lights, six lights, flying slowly overhead. People have said they've seen everything from stealth, you know, planes to, you know, airplanes and everything like that, and this was totally different.
Mm-hmm.
They were describing the lights. I love when they describe the lights. They said they weren't beaming down like a normal light would have a beam. They actually just kind of floated inside. It was just like an eerie type of feeling. And this went over their heads. Thousands and thousands of people saw it, including, and the governor had to come forward. He had to say, you know, well, there is something here, and
he
that's
did
why
come forward
he did
only
it.
After he denounced it, though, and made a kind of a ridiculous type of,
the aerial documentation from a wide variety of sources. Remember, 10% of the people in Arizona claim to have seen this event. That film documentation I personally released at the Curitiba program, and so people had the thrill of seeing things that have been reviewed by specialist Jim De La Tosa, who was one of our best image enhancement specialists in Arizona, along with some of the others who have come forward saying that this is a time where hoaxes are a thing of the past.
Right,
and
so we know they exist. So what has to change in the psychology of our government and the people that choose to, well, first denounce it, also refuse to believe it? How do we make a mental shift there?
I think this has to come really from recognizing that the whole foundation of science, the ontology of science, and the ontology of religion, the meaning of life, its direction, is now being challenged by unknown levels of cosmic intelligence that is requiring us to go back really to square one and redraw the roadmap of where we are in the greater scheme of things. And I feel through my own research in consciousness and physics, in the search for what some would call, like Stuart Hameroff, quantum mind, reality will emerge, that we will realize that we have a much larger mind. We have focal abilities and consciousness abilities to extend our realm omnidirectionally in so many different areas. And if we can use more of our God-given ability to grasp the greater roadmap of the universe that's being shown to us, I believe we, in the development of inner space, which must come first before we go into outer space, can put the two together so we can see that what is here on Earth is also there in space, and there's more out there in space than is here on Earth
in terms of
the vitality of life.
But what's really scary for many people is it's not just a nuts and bolts flying saucer with maybe a couple aliens in it who may or may not look like us. If we're talking about the ability to do remote viewing to other parts of the planet, if we're talking about the ability for time travel and even going into other dimensional spaces, I mean, we're talking about that they are doing it, and I think that's the really hard thing to grasp, that there are these unusual phenomena connected with these, we'll say, alien spacecraft, where they can go through walls, where they can beam people up through light, where they can disappear and manifest. All these things are not just easily explained, and I think it's really a tough job to try to get, you know, Joe Sixpack, as they say, to understand this reality.
Well, that is the whole key, because those types of phenomenons are outside our belief system and outside our worldview, and what we think is reality, and that's why I call this program New Realities, is not what we think. The reality we've been conditioned to believe is true is only a fragment of the totality of something much greater and unknown. And so this is where the shift has to take place, in the ability to let go of what we know and embrace what we don't know, including
our friends. And to follow up on what you're saying, I feel that this change in consciousness is coming at the same time that there are other vectors or factors of experience that are pressing down upon the human race. And I had the opportunity to read some of the official documentation from the UN reports, the Intergovernment Scientific Panel on Climate Change. And one of the reports, I think, may suggest a reason why these extraterrestrial events are increasing in scope and size. Mm-hmm. To quote the official documentation given at the UN high-level Summit on Climate Change for the 24th of September, I read from Mr. John Gormley, who is Minister for the Environment in Ireland. He says, we have 10 years to stabilize our greenhouse gas emissions, 10 years to ensure that our planet remains habitable for human beings, 10 years to act decisively and we have squandered precious time. I think people are hearing the cries of Mother Nature. They're seeing the impact of global warming. They're feeling insufficiency in terms of traditional explanations handed down by classical paradigms of science, religion, economics, and, if you will, interpretation of anthropological data. If we look back at the ancient records, the events of spacecraft, unknown spaceships called by various names in the ancient Sanskrit and Hebrew text, seems to appear at the time of global changes, catastrophes
so
of nature,
the
situations of
upheaval.
There seems to be some correlations going down that make people now to look beyond the horizon, that there may be other reasons here than simply the appearance of strange, elusive spaceships.
Well, so go into that. You're saying they're here right now because our environmental situation is so bad, or apparently, you know, cataclysmic, that they are here to help? Is that what you're...
Well, we're actually saying something even much more, and I think you know our work, Alan, with the Keys of Enoch, and for those people who are listening, you can find out a little bit more at keysofenoch.org, or also our other website, futurescience.org. And what Dr. Hudak experienced in the 1970s is he was kind of taken into a higher dimensional reality. And he saw that not only is there a controlled release coming on with our government leaders telling us and letting us know about extraterrestrials, but the other side, or we could say the extraterrestrials themselves, or what we call the ultra-terrestrials, are actually having their own controlled release experiment and it's our experience. And this has been going on since the 70s. They've given us the science to catch up. They've given us the other concepts of reality so we can catch up. And at a certain point, because the planet is kind of going downhill, we don't think it's only carbon emissions, it's also planetary changes, that we're going to come to a crisis point where we are going to have to be aware that there are other forces in the universe that are here and coordinating with us.
So that's why they're here. They're not. I mean, then you don't go along with the hybridization program and the gray.
Well, we think they've always been here. But, I mean, the contact, the actual direct contact, on a large planetary level would become, will happen more in accord to the crisis that's going on. And we don't think that they're leaving all of it up to them. In other words, we can't just sit back and say, okay, we're going
to
wait. We all have to do our part.
To put it very clearly, there are many levels of cosmic intelligence. Some are here for one type of experimentation, and others are here for another that we're monitoring with our military craft. Still, there's other levels that fall into the realm of the spiritual and the psychological. And the problem in the past is everyone has tried to come up with one paradigm, one conclusion, one type of bottom line, and they've been able to go through tens of thousands of documents worldwide, that's to say the authorities and the specialists, and not come up with any clear answers that can fit, as it were, the roadmap for all of the world cultures. What we're saying is, we have to redraw the roadmap. We have to see that there is something even beyond the extraterrestrial, which we call the ultra-terrestrial, and in that spiritual dimension, understand that if we can open our minds to see the greater picture, then there can be sufficient objective and subjective levels of knowledge that may help each of us in our own unique way to prepare for the coming changes.
Yeah, but let me ask you a very practical question. If we look at the vastness of space and the billions of galaxies and the billions of stars and the billions of galaxies, this is basically a speck of dust. Why is it a very popular speck of dust here? What's going on?
Well, it might not be. I mean, maybe, according to even those who had sightings, like astronaut Gordon Cooper, he actually had a sighting when he was an Air Force pilot over Germany. He said that there's more levels of intelligence out there than there are here. So basically, the universe, I think, we're going to find is teeming with life.
In fact, he said they were like, when he was in outer space, and he said this privately to me before he died, we were working on a book as consultants to Sidney Sheldon, the famous American writer who wrote a book called The Doomsday Conspiracy, a bestseller in 93. Gordon Cooper said that they're thick as fleas. So if you look at the STS NASA film footage, 7-5, we will see that there were literally hundreds and hundreds of unknown space objects that suddenly appeared around the tether of a satellite that was launched by the STS-75 program.
Now, Gordon Cooper said that the universe seems to be teeming with life?
Astronaut Gordon Cooper.
Where does he say that, and where can people?
No, we had a dinner at dinner.
He said
with
that
him.
We were working with him on this important book with Sidney Sheldon, who came out with a fantastic novel called Doomsday Conspiracy, which was a story, of course, in a novel form, of a naval intelligence officer who comes up with information regarding a landing in Switzerland, only to go through the intrigues of trying to release information ahead of time. And as Sheldon did it with his wit and brilliance, there are all sorts of caveats of various agencies and various groups that wanted to keep this information private. But as the storyline goes, there ultimately would be a time and a day of reckoning where we as a planetary humanity would have to see the daylight and recognize that we have cosmic cousins. We have those that are less violent, although there are violent cultures out there in space, and we would have to prepare ourselves with the right psychological and sociological adjustments for that time.
Well, yeah,
I believe we are much closer now than we were 10 years ago.
But, yeah, but now, why do you think, then, the government, I guess it's really up to the U.S. government that's really holding back. Are they holding back because they feel if the technology came forward, we wouldn't be dependent on oil, or they wouldn't be able to control the people, or what do you feel is the real reason for this such a prolonged cover-up?
Well, I think there's several things, and you touched about on some of them, and mostly they don't understand the complexity of what exists out there, or they don't think the people would understand, even if they figured it out, because there's more than one level of intelligence. And if people are being abducted, what do you say to your people? Oh, well, excuse me, occasionally you can be abducted. We don't have any control over it. You know, good luck. That's one aspect. The other aspect is, yeah, they've kept us in the dark for so long. How do they come back and say, oh, yeah, in, you know, 45 or whatever, we had, you know, contact. We had alien bodies and we didn't tell you.
Yeah.
So I think they're waiting for one particular event that then they'll be able to release it, or it'll just sneak out and leak out and they'll have to admit it at some point, but this hasn't happened in some 40 years.
Dale Hynek once said, who was one of the great pioneers in the whole field of ufology, Project Blue Book was a $6 million cover-up. So it was his terminology as being perhaps one of the most public government insiders to weigh heavily the implications of what this would mean
Someone's calling in. Is there someone calling in to the show?
Hello.
Yes, did you have a question?
I'm really enjoying this show. Yes, I do, actually.
Okay.
I've heard you all discussing about change and talking about, you know, what it's going to take to change the mindset of our governments worldwide on bringing forth, you know, the truth about our extraterrestrial sisters and brothers. And I'd like to hear your thoughts about the religious foundations. I know that they've grown quite substantial here worldwide. And I know that they have their hands in our government, and so I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were on helping to change the mindset within the religious foundation.
Thank you, because that's a very good question for these particular guests, because they deal with the scientific and the spiritual. So yes, please.
Exactly. Thank you. I'll start and we'll both answer that question because
okay,
it is right up our alley.
Yes.
Actually, Dr. Urtek has retranslated and interpreted the entire Bible based on a higher cosmic cosmology, and that is available in mostly on CD and completely on cassette. We're moving all those from cassette to CD on our website, connectedwithkeysofenoch.org. But basically, as far as we're concerned, it doesn't deny any of the religions. And I think some of the modern theologians, such as Billy Graham and others, have understood that you can go back and you can say, yes, God created us and God created other life forms. In fact, we interpret even the 7 days of creation. We go back to the original Hebrew in a lot of our interpretation. You had the yom, but no one understood what a yom was, a day, when you didn't have the earth and the sun and the moon. So it was a different cosmology, really looking from a higher reality on down. It could have been 7,000 years instead of 7 days. I mean, there's just different ways of looking at it. It could even be 70,000 years because it's a God's yom, not an earthly yom. This
is where
the difference...
religion is in the way, Desiree, of
well,
yeah,
that's the second part of I know your caller's question,
uh-huh.
is that are they blocking the mindset of the government from making these changes? And certainly there's the conservative approach on that, but ultimately I don't think it just takes that. There's the conservative approach on the banking system, there's a conservative approach on all levels, even the scientists. I mean, when new science is coming out, we work as the Academy for Future Science, when new science is coming out, there's also the conservative approach that's usually taken, and everyone else is thrown out the window who's trying to make changes. We believe more changes should be made, even on the scientific levels, and that hasn't been made.
Well,
so,
I agree. Yeah.
This is what we're fighting everywhere on every level, and of course the religion is just one of those.
Well, I do think we need to change the paradigm that religion has, the control that religion has on people, and open up to what you're talking about
is
the level of spirituality and divine.
I wanted to restate this. We're talking about going beyond the classical paradigms of religion, not throwing religion out the window, and certainly not overlooking spiritual philosophy and psychology, which in the Coptic documents and the ancient Hebrew documents acknowledge that beyond what we would call the low-flying, elusive objects called the extraterrestrial levels of intelligence.
Okay.
There is even greater realms such as the B'nai Elohim, the sons of God, to use the Hebrew terminology, that were operated from spiritual craft called the Merkabah in the Sanskrit, the Agata. All of these categories are usually connected with mystical experiences or higher consciousness experiences, but they certainly do not deny the divine and the promise of hope and pluralism that comes with the expansion of the human race ultimately into the frontiers of a greater universe.
But Jesus was up against the same thing with the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and those same scenarios, you know, haven't left us in 6,000 years, that you're always up against the more conservative, more traditional element, and we're all trying to make the breakthroughs and the changes on every level. And we believe that these all levels are being made, and we work with the archaeology that's bringing out some of the ancient texts that tell us about these realities. We're working with the astronomy, and we're working also with the new sciences. And so on every level, this is what the Keys of Enoch were all about. As you know, 54 areas of science and philosophy will make a quantum leap by the time the real crisis and change comes, and people will be prepared.
Well, thank you,
Paula. Well, then I have another question for you as well. If I may, what came to thought real quick is, how is that going to affect, you know, our Bible and some of the belief systems within that structure with the people, and so I'll let you guys just kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yes, if you want to hang up and listen, and we'll answer that question. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Well, again, I urge all your listeners to check out our tape cassettes and CDs on every book of the Bible done with a higher cosmic awareness. And really, the multi-levels of intelligence, the parallel universes, the extraterrestrial and ultra-terrestrial, and the divine oneness of the universe is all there in the Bible. And so none of this reality, if people really understand the original ancient truths, which were even probably more specifically revealed by the Coptics in our book, Pisces Sophia, talks about this, validates all the realities we're talking about. There's nothing that this will invalidate biblically. It's only the mindset and the interpretation that needs to shift.
That's true. I recommend reading The Keys of Enoch, Book of Knowledge by Dr. Hertog, and the other books that Desiree and Dr. Hertog translated, the Pista Sophia. And yes, go to the Academy for Future Science, or futurescience.org.
Org, yeah.
Yeah, but along those lines, what I think is a very important point and one that I've really been trying to understand is, like, there's this thing about the nature of reality. When you are confronted by ultra-terrestrials or even extraterrestrials, you're within a field of thought that shifts the way we see reality. So we're in an altered state. I've seen spaceships, and then just by the recognition of it, I felt myself shift into an alternate reality. So there's that whole level of discussion, and inclusion has to come in if we're really going to recognize what's here. It's a change in a state of consciousness, don't you think? Because even when you went up and on the higher levels, you were not in your normal state of mind. So something else has to happen.
I agree, and I would simply say, and your listeners may want to write this down, that we are multidimensional, non-local human beings. Our consciousness is not at this local point. It is consciousness that is capable of transcending the body and experiencing other levels of universal reality. And in that sense, we reclaim our cosmic birthright that is there in the original Hebrew Aramaic Bible, that we were created as beings reflective of the divine spark and nurturing a ability eventually to go into a greater program of creation.
Yeah, but
and
how do
yes,
we get...
We reclaim the ancient text, the Coptic, the Dead Sea Scrolls, many of the very important scrolls. I think we're going to see a very important new theology that is willing to accept the positive side of the scientific. The scientific on its end will have to accept the importance of consciousness evolution and consciousness awareness, and in that greater common ground we will see the reality of a whole new philosophy of life.
And if I can say, the real limitation that we all have is that we see ourselves as only here, only in this three-dimensional reality of what we pick up with our five senses. We've got to get beyond that, and that's the new reality. That's our true identity, and that's really breaking through the old mindset.
So how do we get used to understanding and become accustomed with our multidimensional existence? Once it's kind of a, you know, it's as if the rug is pulled out from under us. Suddenly someone finds themselves in an altered state or encountering beings, and they, most of people are traumatized by that because they suddenly realize that reality was not what they thought it was. So how do we get used to it is my question.
I think we need to realize that the changes of consciousness come through different levels of energy that we process. We are, as the keys of Enoch tell us, biotransducers. We are energy vessels. All life comes out of vibrations. All life goes back into the vibrations of the universal creator. And if we can use a new type of music and use this as a way of seeing the coordination and harmony between body, mind, and spirit, then we can effectively speed up or quicken this process of preparing ourselves, protecting ourselves, and balancing ourselves in this very awesome world change that we're now going through on many, many levels. No person can sit down before a bunch of scientific books and extract that which was going to please his or her insights regarding the cosmic unknown. No one's going, unless you are a biblical scholar, can go back and simply reread the Bible and see all of the nuances and all of the text speak out with the coming of the angelic dimension, the angelic languages, what the great apostle Paul tells us that we shall judge angels. No one can sort out the levels between the extraterrestrial, the ultra-terrestrial, and beyond unless they are put in a situation of what I believe to be deep prayer, meditation, and education. And for us, this has come through the use of music as a methodology and having a background in science, spiritual philosophy, and music. I have been able to work with many gifted musicians throughout the world, like the late Alice Coltrane, Ravi Shankar, even Carlos Santana, who've been able to show the young people of the world how there is a process through which one can sublimate one's energy, how one can focus one's perceptual vision more directly on other issues than the material world. And it's this consciousness change that must go with music that I feel is so important for the awakening of what Alice Coltrane called super soul.
Right.
And otherwise, we get swept away by the phenomenon of material things and the noumena, or the inner mental phenomena of fear, unknowingness, and our whole reality game collapses. So we have to bootstrap our situation very, very carefully.
Well, I appreciate you bringing in music and the arts, and I also, and so it does seem like what you're saying, if disclosure by government and the revelations that we are not alone in the universe is really going to happen on a global scale, we have to open up to these spiritual realities.
And this is why Antonio Choi from Peru was so important at that Brazilian conference, because he mentioned the need for the spiritual vision. Mm. He brought in the concept of the Divine Mother, the aspect, there is a mothering aspect of the universe that we see reflected in the Judeo-Christian traditions, but extends to all traditions if we look deeply and profoundly within ourselves. It's this nurturing of the soul is the nurturing of spirit that reaches out. And science and its, all of its technological gadgetry has overlooked the subjective dimensions, the interdimensional and personal levels that I feel have played into the hands of the bureaucrats who do not understand many of these case studies, and lacking the keen interpretation that's necessary, it thought that these documents should be classified. Now, I'm not going to argue that during the Cold War there was a reason for keeping certain levels of sensitive classification in place. But again, as we come together as a global society, as we face together, as Ronald Reagan said at the United Nations, a certain uncertainties, we need to see certain situations bringing us into a whole new way of looking at the universe in terms of what I will call a new consciousness cosmology.
And what we feel, Alan, is that really the shift is coming. The new realities are coming, and people are waking up to it and really changing their whole cosmology. I see people no longer, you know, wanting to be stuck in the old mindset, but trying to move into something that's real for them, that they feel, that they vibrate with, that they want to share a greater love. And it's a very positive move, I think, on behalf of many, many people.
So it is a good time we are coming into as the old sciences fall away, the old Newtonian mechanical views of reality in the world start to shift to more holographic quantum understanding. We then have a foundation to incorporate other beings and the value of the subjective experience, which is what the quantum theory
is all about.
To. Yeah.
As Einstein once said, the mystical experience is the true foundation of science, and it's this truer science, or what I will call this future science, that is pushing us into a new direction. As we push the envelope, we're discovering that we're as much in space as space is within us. We're discovering that we are multidimensional beings. Mm-hmm. Through the studies that were done at Stanford Research Institute back in the 70s, we're realizing the work of Einstein was telling us that the consciousness can go into a great level of distant communication, come back, and relay other information that the physical body cannot physically touch or measure. There's a whole multidimensional side of life that is now being validated by many of the German, the Russian, the British scientists that is mind-blowing, pardon the expression. It is opening us up to this fantastic, wonderful divine spark that we have here in the corpus design of life. We call the Adam, the human being. And if we go back to the very first chapters of Genesis, we have this divine imperative seated within us that ultimately we will come back into a higher level of communication with the co-creative power that was invested in us by the Elohistic world.
Well, it seems like the old sciences will never, ever embrace the reality that there are UFOs. They just won't. They just can't. It's like what Thomas Kuhn said in The Revolutions in Scientific Theory. The old scientists can't break out of what they believe to be true, even if they knew it was true, they couldn't accept it.
Max Planck once said in Germany, the science goes ahead by coffin of one scientist followed by the coffin of another scientist. We have to wait till the old die out to see the fresh minds of the young come forth.
Yeah, but the crisis is coming sooner than that. But think about it. I mean, if spaceships can really go faster than the speed of light, if they can really do, go beyond the limitations of gravity, if they can go into multi-dimensions, I mean, it totally changes the reality of all those traditional scientists.
It does, but the scientists won't be able to even see it. It's like what John Max said when he talked to people at Harvard. They said, we don't care if it's true. We still don't believe it, you know?
Exactly. Well, that's why. It's going to take a major shift, but I think we're all part of that, and we know a lot of scientists that are really moving very quickly into showing that we can do much greater things than we've done, and we have to move ahead with these things. Otherwise, we'll be left in the quagmire like the dinosaurs.
Well, yeah. So what are your predictions? Both of you, would you say 5 years, 10 years? We have to wait till 2012. What's the story?
Well, we still think it's step by step. I mean, if you look recently, this last week, they looked at taking skin cells and making them into stem cells instead of using embryonic stem cells. So little by little, things are coming out. Changes are taking place in terms of all fields of science and all fields of psychology.
William Horrobell, who's from Stanford University, who's deeply spiritual, has come away to get around from the problem of stem cell research. And man of deep religious conviction. He's shown that there is ways that the new image of mankind can be repositioned without ignoring the advances in science. So I feel that we are going to see a quantum change right across the board in the next 10 years, where there will have to be a psychological and sociological component to the contact society. It's not something that's going to be announced from the higher platitudes of a given group of thinkers in Washington, D.C., or for that matter, in Geneva or in Tokyo. It's going to have to come out of the inner resources of the human experience that we as a human society must pull together, and we must learn to more quickly share our resources, our scientific brilliance, and also map out a whole new astronomy cosmology that will allow us to be prepared, whether this event happening comes in 3 years or 33 years. I feel it's going to be probably within the next 10 years that we're going to see more.
So we have to map out a new heaven and a new earth first. We have to kind of put the new symbols in place. That's what I feel as artists and as writers. We have to create the new realities in the ideas in order for people then to kind of grow into that.
Exactly.
So,
and this is what the Keys of Enoch are all about, and our mathematical material in the geophysics, the planetary physics that we published in 1973 are now being validated as accurately showing the melting in the area of the Arctic and Antarctic. It was considered to be science fiction some years ago, but now UN scientists are realizing that the ice melt in the Arctic is 10 times faster than they thought, and the mathematical predictions are holding up. It would be foolish to give a time and a date for any type of cosmic event that's going to put us directly in touch with higher intelligence. Clearly, the evidence suggests that there has been some small level of interconnection taking place already in various parts of the world, but I think this will still require great coordination, great synergy amongst the specialists, amongst the futurists, amongst the sociologists, and I think the next 7 years is going to be very important as we awaken the humanity, primarily through the cries of Mother Earth, to the fact that we cannot continue to go as we are going without some type of biospheric collapse, either on one side or astrophysical breakthrough on the other, recognizing that we need our friends in space that are positive to help us beyond this this quagmire in history.
Huh. So we are coming to a real crisis point on all levels of reality, you would say.
Exactly. And that's being understood in the great hopper, the great rooms of the think tanks, the specialists who are recognizing that the Earth may be taken over by very violent events brewing, you know, below the oceans, coming from the possible event on the Grand Canary Islands with the island of Palma blowing its lid, sending the tidal wave in this direction. There's all sorts of negative things, but I would like to be positive in saying that in terms of the ingenuity of the human race, we've always had a certain percentage of humans that survived the catastrophes of history, and we're going to see the experiences of the future outweigh those negative events. And I believe Homo Universalis, universal humanity, is at our doorstep. We have to be Homo Noeticus, thinking humanity, experiential humanity, and spiritual humanity in the deep sense of the great writers and prophets of history, the great mystics.
And we actually feel we are part of an evolutionary ongoing creation, that we didn't really start from the ants and the stones and the rocks here, but we were part of a cosmic civilization that really does go on, and this is really just getting a little kick in the butt to get us to move on.
Well, I do agree that this change is happening, but I think it's real. I think we're in for really exciting times. I don't look at the doom and gloom aspect, but I think, you know, the opening up of greater human awareness, the coming of these space friends, we can call them, and the change in technology and science, it's really, really an exciting time.
I would like to call them extra-celestials, not extraterrestrials, but extra-celestials.
but don't you get how exciting it is that the where we are now?
Yeah, this is a great quantum leap. This is a great threshold that we're at the very premise of.
The exposé of top secret documents by the top scientists and engineers and aerospace people on the planet is pointing the way to multi-level existence, multi-level intelligence, and ultimately a multi-level human being who is taking his or her birthright back and saying, wait a minute, I can wake up, I can smell the fire and the smoke, but I know there's something more divine to the whole purpose of life. And this is where the image of the Christ figure, the image of the original Adamic figure, the original of the Abrahamic figure, and I can go on, Ezekiel with the whole experience of the wheel within the wheel, all of this comes together, and suddenly the Bible makes sense as a higher harmonic of preparing us for a great quickening, a great ascent, that leaves behind the bureaucrats and their slave rulers and all of the others who are looking only at mundane events and triangular spacecraft that puzzle them. We're looking at something far more profound.
Right. I would not even, I mean, personally, me wouldn't even include the religious literature, because I think it's up to each individual to open their mind to new possibilities and consider something much greater is possible. I mean, Charles Fort, again, who I've been reading a lot of, he documented UFOs all through the 1800s. He says when the great discovery is made, the final perceptions will be of the obvious. He says what will we understand at that point will be something that's always been here. We just haven't been in the state of consciousness to see it. So
we will understand the coming. We will understand the coming of the divine family, we will call them by different names, our cosmic cousins, those that respect us, those that share the same Godhead with us, as opposed to those who violate us and those who keep us puzzled as to the deep importance of our cosmic birthright.
Right, and within that, we have to redefine what it is to be human. Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, but I also think finding ourselves really beyond even these lower extraterrestrials, you find ourselves as cosmic beings that really are spiritual beings, not just human beings, but actually light human beings. And
so
that,
our identification with the Earth is also a limitation in form. Is that what
exactly
you're saying? So we're really cosmic, that belong to all space and all time.
To put this in Sanskrit logic, Atman is Brahman and Brahman is Atman.
Can you translate that?
We suddenly realize that we are more than simply myoplasma here on Mother Earth. We realize that we are beings that are part of an infinite process of creation. And this is the, shall we say, the passport to infinity that we're beginning to acquire.
So maybe that's why all these beings are here, because the Earth is pregnant with consciousness that's about to be awakened into the higher levels of who we really are.
Exactly.
We're
recognizing the multiversity. We're realizing the much greater pluralism of life. And again, this is why the traditional authorities have been somewhat reluctant in many areas, very puzzled by the vastness of what's out there. And it's the fact that we have such a small percentage of knowledge of what's out there in the hands of the experts, that the real situation here that requires courageous pilots, aerospace engineers, sociologists, theologians to team up and to come forth with a much deeper understanding of the roadmap. It's also important for us not simply to have data at our fingertips, but to go into a deeper sense of dedication to the human race, its future, by the way we think, the way we breathe, nurture resources, those that remain, and build spiritual sustainability as well as economic and social stability and sustainability. For us, it's the opportunity to use the greater music, the greater art, the greater orchestration of creation that is stirring within the minds of a new generation of pioneers.
Yeah, no, I agree. We should wrap up in a little bit, but can you also talk about the presentation you gave in Brazil, and then Desiree?
Well, I was able to show the multi-levels of cosmic intelligence through actual film exhibits and actual details of some of the stories that befuddle some of our top experts at NASA and other parts of the world.
What? Can you go into a little detail?
Well, for example, I did show the documentation of Uri Geller, the pictures of the three spacecraft that were seen at 33,000 feet over the Atlantic Ocean back in the early 70s, and the private presentation that was made to a group of NASA scientists and aerospace experts who couldn't explain the triangulation of three vehicles that you could clearly see from within the window of the commercial jet. The details of these spacecraft was amazing. It was one of the best pictures ever taken at that time, and really opened the think tanks in the United States to the reality that something else is happening in space that was privately understood by a handful of astronauts and specialists who later made their own story available, such as Gordon Cooper.
And I know, Dr. Jack, you also showed some of the image faces of some of the different extraterrestrial intelligences people have cited, some that look more reptilian, some that look more Adamic like we do, some that look maybe some of the ancient cultures that have
The angelic side.
How many races are there?
Well, there are many categories, at least 70 plus, in just in terms of those that we have film material and other material that's been collected by experts, anthropologists, and social scientists from parts of the world.
And, of course, the grays, which are very popular for
many
people.
Also have the opportunity to show some of the new levitation technology. We have three types of levitation, maglev technology that can run these super trains in France, Germany, and Japan. We have the semiconductor levitation through Dr. Chu, who won the Nobel Prize. But we have a new type of electrodynamic levitation that can move objects in create flotation cushions, and I had the opportunity to share many of the engineers and physicists from the universities of Brazil some of this new technology that's being developed behind the scenes.
Oh,
I think this is another step forward.
So this is sort of where is that a reverse engineering of the UFO craft, or is that just
well, this
our
was
own
independent
creativity.
Of the UFO craft, but it points to the fact that we can do now these first baby steps in controlled levitation much, you know, on a much higher scale of credibility and maneuverability than was present by the Air Force back in the 50s, then we can begin to engineer things with some other resources that can point to some of the solutions we will have, where we can take, for example, energy out of the salt water. We can remobilize their planet and no longer feel ourselves victimized by the fossil fuel mentality and having to depend upon oil and petroleum as our only source and means to dealing with the expansion of global economies. We're dealing with a very serious report from the UN, and I just think people need to listen to Ban Ki-moon's papers, his pronouncements of findings by the UN experts, and realize that, you know, it's going to be a rocky road, but at the same time, from the standpoint of the biblical context, the other sacred literatures, we've always seen the planet go through these periods of time, coming out with a much greater cosmology of humanity being renewed and given a whole new dimension of reality. And I think we're being prepared for this great quantum change very quickly.
And it's great work that you both are doing. Desiree, you have any final words?
No, I thought it was a great program, and I just recommend people, if they want to delve deeper into the philosophy behind this, to go to our website at futurescience.org. And I hope to be back on your program in the future and
talk
more.
Do you have any words about the environment? Because I know you're also an expert on the environment.
Well, we're very concerned, of course, with what's going on. But we're looking forward to this Bali conference that's coming up the first weeks of December. And it has, again, the heads of state meeting together. And maybe for the first time, even though it's the 13th annual kind of conference, making some real changes. They're looking forward to really making some changes, and I think that's important. We need the new technology.
What kind of changes in?
Well, in the way everything is handled on this planet, we need the new technology, which is we feel that they're ignoring. And you know,
they're ignoring for the free energy systems. That seems
well, not only free, but there's also hydrogen energy. There's a lot of different. I mean, every car sold from this point on should at least be hybrid. You know, and even flex fuel with hydrogen, which is the BMW is coming out with. So, you know, there should be all these shifts. There should be more economics to benefit. Even, as I was saying, the toilets in New York City, every toilet should have this new low water flow situation.
I know, it's such a waste. And I also think that every product, every packaging that is made should be government approved. I mean, plastic.
Or paper,
Or plastic
paper products
that's biodegradable. I mean,
you know,
billions of blue plastic bottles that do not...
Well, you know, bottles aren't bad if they're recycled. For a long time, they didn't want to recycle here in New York, and we're all right now in New York. Bottles can actually be used and changed into oil.
Uh-huh.
So there's things that you can do, but for a long time, they didn't want to make the extra effort. You know, it might cost a little bit more.
Well, this is where government should come in and force the companies to be responsible.
Now with gas at $100 a barrel, I would strongly think that we're now moving into that range where it's worth paying a little bit more for something better.
Right. I agree. And I think that's part of what the ETs, the extraterrestrials, whatever you want to call them, are waiting for us to help ourselves.
And some of them have given us insights. I mean, even Einstein used to go up and meditate. You know, in Palm Springs, we knew friends that knew him quite well. And he would go up into the, you know, high area of the mountains and meditate every morning. I mean, this is where the information usually comes from, these kind of inner awakenings.
They do. That's what moves the whole civilization forward, is by insight.
So I can say to our audience there, keep a smile on your heart and look to the heavens with a positive view, ad astra, to the stars, and be aware of the great music we have available on our website, some of the great and gifted composers and instrumentalists throughout the world who are working with the astronomy and cosmology of the Keys of Enoch, who recognize that it's up to each of us to reclaim our divine heritage and to go beyond, I would say, the negative undertow that's always going to be there
right.
in materialistic
totally
vision.
Agree. I'm going to, well, thank you both. I'm going to, I wish I had some of your music, but I'm going to play this other music by Neil Young after the Gold Rush, where he mentions UFOs at the last verse of the song. But I've been talking to Dr. J.J. Hertog and Desiree Hertog. You're going to be a doctor at some point, right, Desiree?
She is.
Oh.
She's willing and able to be on any time.
Okay, good.
Bless you. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Alan.
The Academy for Future Science and futurescience.org. And this is Alan Steinfeld. And this is New Realities. And each week at this time, 7 p.m. California time, 10 p.m. New York time, you can listen to the latest cutting-edge information. And here's Neil Young.